Welcome to the Dean's Podcast, the podcast about issues shaping graduate studies in Canada. This podcast is brought to you by the University Affairs magazine. My name is Carolyn Waters, and I'm the Dean of Graduate Studies at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia, as well as the President of the Canadian Association of Graduate Studies, CAGS, for the year 2009. Every month, you can listen in as I talk to other deans, faculty, postdocs, and graduate students about where graduate studies is going in Canada and internationally. In this podcast, I talk to Marty Criceworth, Dean of Graduate Studies at McGill University in Montreal. Marty is the outgoing president of the Canadian Association of Graduate Studies, CAGS, and I caught up with Marty in Washington at the Council of Graduate Schools annual conference. We talk about the highlights of his year as president, including CAGS initiatives on postdoc supervision guidelines and professional skills development. And then we move on to his views as a dean on some differences between grad studies in Ontario and Quebec, including joint degrees in the famous co-tutels. Okay, this is Carolyn Waters back still at CGS conference, and I have with me Marty Criceworth, who's the dean at University of McGill. So welcome, Marty.
Hello.
So I thought maybe we'd start, maybe you tell us a little bit about, do you want to talk about being the CAGS president this year?
Sure. This year at CAGS, we had some interesting, a couple things happened that were quite interesting. We had a very good conference at Edmonton, in that, a number of issues came up. One of the ones that I'd like to just speak briefly about has to do with postdoctoral fellows in Canada. Postdocs have recently been sort of prominent from a dean's point of view, a graduate dean's point of view, because there was a tax opinion that came out this past summer that stated that the kind of educational deduction that they used to be available for if they were being paid as trainees and not employees, which is the case for a number of our institutions, all of the institutions in Quebec and others throughout the country, there was a opinion that said that that educational deduction should be stopped because they really didn't function as students. This has caused a lot of discussion and a lot of movement from CAGS and other groups in order to ensure that the postdoctoral fellows remain trainees as they are. They're still undergoing training, which is why they're fellows and why they're postdocs and not faculty members. And we're trying to find the best way in order to make a case to substantiate that claim. So we're in the midst of that now. We talked about it at CAGS. And this is something that, at the CAGS conference, and this is something that CAGS is going to follow up on as more information becomes available.
So any other hot topic for CAGS this year?
Let me think. What other things came up on CAGS? We're very, very concerned. A couple of documents came out that we're very pleased with. We've been working on guidelines for supervision for the last year, and this is something that would be a guideline across the entire country. And we had Kevin Vesey and others working on putting that together, and at the conference, we brought the guidelines to the conference, and I think there people are pleased now that we can post them, and we have a list of the kinds of very general supervisory duties and responsibilities on both sides, supervisor and supervisee, that we can now have for other universities to then use as a kind of background for their own individual supervisory guidelines. The other document that came had to do with professional skill development, something that we started working on with a group that involved the Tri-Councils and Teaching and Learning Services. It's been going on for a couple years. We now are at the place where we have a document that was going to be CAG supported with, we had, as I said, input from the Tri-Councils, and this is also going to be on our website, and this shows the kind of preparation that we feel is necessary for to provide high-quality personnel and professional researchers outside of the particular disciplinary research skills that the students or that the PhDs get.
So do you think there's any role for the Tri-Councils in actually making this happen?
I think that's it. Yeah, I'm sure Carolyn will be working on this when she becomes president in 2 weeks. And and I certainly will help as a past president, and the CAG's executive will, the CAB's board will work on. Yes, I think we want to go back to some of the people in the Tri-Council and say, now we have what we feel comfortable with, and see how they respond in terms of either implementing this as a guideline or making researchers aware of it. The Tri-Councils, I think, are a little reluctant to mandate certain requirements for the grants, although this is a possibility. So we have to find some way of talking to them about having the knowledge that these are goals that we may share with either making it something less than a mandate, or if individual tri-councils agree that it should be, we're all for it. And we think it's important for the discussion.
Any chance that they'll fund it?
Don't know. That, I think, is a big issue. That's the point. Is it came up in our discussions. If, okay, the universities now feel that we should be responsible for producing these kinds of skills that many of us do already, but in different ways, that should be part of training for PhDs. And we're saying, as an educational group that consolidates a lot of opinion about training, and we say we agree that these are the things that should happen. Well, if they're not part of our current mandates now, at least explicitly, how are we going to find the resources to do this? So this is the question of funding. I think it's a great opportunity to try to ask for that. I think it's a way that we can look nationally for this, which might not work if we went institution by institution to our provincial governments. I think it would be no chance.
Yeah, no chance at all.
Yeah.
So I want to just shift the focus a
sure.
little bit. So Marty, you've just moved from Ontario to Quebec. So you want to talk a little bit about surprises, or
sure.
good and bad? And
yeah. Well, it's just, I think it's an interesting example of the way in which higher education works in Canada, where the provincial governments basically control the educational processes, guidelines, funding, and everything for the education of its citizens, and but higher education as well. So if I had moved from Alberta to Nova Scotia or Ontario to Quebec or wherever, you're going to notice differences. Quebec has a very different tuition system than Ontario did, a very different funding system, and that has implications for the way in which you organize the university and the way in which you find resources for graduate studies. Quebec also is, in some ways, the government is more centralized in its concern for data and its concern for consistency across the province. Ontario has a very fine body in OCGS, Ontario Council of Graduate Studies, and that is a good adjudicating mechanism for consistent quality assurance across the programs in Ontario. It has weakened somewhat, I think, in the past year for various reasons. But Quebec does have that, but it's at the ministry level rather than at the OCGS was an independent body that was sanctioned by the executive heads of Ontario and worked outside of the context of the Ministry of Education. In Quebec, approval, quality assurance of programs, and it goes through the government. The functions are similar, but I think the government takes longer to do these things. So getting a program passed, one of the things is getting a program passed in Quebec is a longer process.
How long?
It can take up to 2 years. And, of course, when we're trying to develop, in all of our research institutions, we're trying to develop cutting-edge programs to attract students and to attract them away from other institutions sometimes. 2 years is too long.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the, that's so beside funding and that, the nice thing, also one of the things that I thought was good, and it was very consistent across Ontario, Quebec, which is not true in other provinces, which I think may be something that other provinces should pay attention to, is that we have provincial graduate awards. And we have those in Quebec, and we had them in Ontario, and some provinces don't. And I think it's unfortunate that there's not more consistency of that across across Canada.
So one last question. Sure. Can you explain to all the rest of us what a co-tutel is?
Yes, I can try, although my university does not have them.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Why not?
We have not agreed on. There's a lot of...
Well, you better explain what they are.
Okay, a co-tutel is a co-degree program where a student, and a co-tutel, using the French term, I'm assuming that the model is a French university, Canadian university collaboration. Now, these work at various levels. Some of the collaborations, as they can be, are at the level of the province. They could be every university in the province has connections with certain universities in another place. They could be individual universities. They can be individual departments. They can be individual programs. When I was in Ontario, we had co-tutels at institutions. Within different departments, they would have a memorandum of understanding with that. What it means is that a student does a body of work that is fits the requirements of the degrees of two institutions, and there's got to be agreement about, so if somebody were to have one, let's say, at McGill, which doesn't exist, but let me use University of Montreal, who has a lot of co-tutels, the student at the PhD level would do a certain amount of research for the program, courses for the program, comprehensives for the program that has been agreed upon between the two institutions. There is collaboration along the way. Some of them are as tight as having a supervisor from each institution right from the very beginning. All of them would have supervising of the thesis by one member of each institution, and there would be a common exam process. The memorandum of agreement may, in terms of formal things, so what will happen is the student will then complete the program work, complete the thesis examination, and when he or she were done, there would be two degrees that they would get. They would get the PhD from the University of, well, let's say, Aix-en-Provence, I'm just making this up, and University of Montreal.
So they are doctor-doctor?
They are doctor-doctor. And one of the reasons for this, one of the motivations for this, at least from France, is, and you can have joint degrees, of course, or co-tutels with other countries and other institutions. But with France, is that I'm not sure this is a law, but it certainly is a practice whereby you cannot become an academic at a French institution if you don't have a French degree. So the appeal is that a student who's interested in studying at Montreal or McGill or wherever, or Toronto or Western, or would not naturally go to get this degree when he or she would have to, if they wanted to come back to France, they couldn't become an academic.
What about getting one shared degree?
It seems to be fine, but one doesn't know. I mean, I don't know what the motivations for that is, but that's another option. So either you get two degrees, or you could get one shared degree, and I think that's partly, sometimes that's called a co-tutel as well. Yeah. I think it's confused, and this is why we need to get the nomenclature straight of what is a joint degree, you know, what is maybe a collaborative degree. And right now, it works at the level of, frequently works at the level of institution. It's not a bad idea if we could get some guidelines across the country, even, mm-hmm. to say what seems to make sense to us.
So that's something CAGS could work on.
I would
sure.
think so. I think that would be a good idea, and we'd need a lot of our partners who have these degrees and work well. I'm saying my own institution doesn't have them now, but we're very cognizant of them because there's pressure, particularly in Quebec, from the French government. The French ambassador, whenever he or she meets with the university heads in Quebec, one of the issues that always comes up is co-tutel. Particularly because of the French language commonality between many of our cities. But I was surprised to find that there's a lot of pressure on McGill now, and we're looking at it because a lot of the French students would like to go to an English language university because they already, of course, know their French, and they want to be able to have better qualifications for English for their international prominence, their international credentials.
Great. Anything final words there, Marty?
No,
we're
thank you.
We're all off to see the museum now.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Marty.
That's it for this episode. If you'd like to get in touch with me about something you heard on this podcast or about an issue that you'd like to see covered, please email me at carolyn.waters@dal.ca. You can also leave a comment at the bottom of the page where this podcast is posted at universityaffairs.ca. Until next time, I'm Carolyn Waters, and thanks for listening.